This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance supplement product line. Protocol's mission is to provide top-quality supplements at affordable prices. Protocol offers 50 years of expertise, providing formulations based on the latest advances in nutritional science and incorporating trademarked ingredients that have been tested for efficacy in clinical trials and laboratory studies. I'm so confident in their products that I've included many of them in my Intelligent Medicine Lifestyle Protocols. Protocol for Life Balance is only available through licensed practitioners, so ask your doctor or healthcare professional for it by name. You can get them at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we're answering your questions. Questions can come to us via radio program at AOL.com. And we got a whole mailbag full of them this week, right, Layla?
Yes, we do. The next one is from John. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, when someone is diagnosed with ischemic cardiomyopathy and having a low ejection fraction, and told that they will need to be on pharmaceutical drugs for the rest of their life by a conventional cardiologist, would you think, as Dr. Sinatra does, that supplements like CoQ10, zinc, selenium, magnesium will enable them to eventually be drug-free? And are there any contraindications with taking these supplements while taking pharmaceuticals?
Okay, so first of all, you know, what is cardiomyopathy? Cardiomyopathy means a weakening of the heart muscle. Mm-hmm. And typically the heart becomes sort of baggy. And there are many reasons for cardiomyopathy. There can be cardiomyopathy can be caused by such conditions as lupus. It can be caused by a virus.
Yes.
A virus can attack the heart muscle and damage it.
Yeah.
Cardiomyopathy can be, there's hereditary heart cardiomyopathies, where the heart just enlarges and enlarges. And then finally becomes weak and baggy. Mm-hmm. And there's also what's called ischemic mm-hmm. cardiomyopathy.
This is ischemic,
and ischemia means there's not enough blood.
Yeah.
So typically that occurs after you've had heart attacks, multiple heart attacks, or maybe you've had poor circulation to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no real complete return from that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you've damaged a lot of the heart.
Okay.
Some of the heart gets knocked out
right.
after a heart attack. And so you have ischemic cardiomyopathy. And then that might lead to heart failure.
Yeah.
That's what ends up happening. It's people with CHF, congestive heart failure. And what we're seeing is we're actually seeing a reduction in heart attacks, or we're seeing a minimization of the damage of heart attacks. Fewer people die from heart attacks.
Yeah.
But more and more people survive with ischemic cardiomyopathy. And we're going to have a whole lot of people with this condition now because of advances in heart attack treatment and prevention.
Hmm.
Can you take the Sinatra protocol? What does it consist of? Magnesium, coenzyme Q10.
Yes.
D-ribose and carnitine. Those mm-hmm. are the fabulous foursome, you know, that are part of his program.
Yeah.
And the answer is yes, and they will not interfere with the medications that you're taking.
Right, right.
But it may reduce your dependency on these medications,
mm-hmm.
but it may not eliminate them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that low ejection fraction.
That's a definition of cardiomyopathy or congestive heart failure.
Okay.
Now, you want an ejection fraction 50-60%, but actually, some people who can barely get across the room, you know, they're huffing and puffing and short of breath, they may have an ejection fraction of, 15-20.
Mm.
It means very little blood is being pumped out of the heart. The heart's very inefficient. The pump is breaking down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that EF number, ejection fraction, is very important. How do you determine that? usually from an echocardiogram,
yeah.
although you can also get an ejection fraction when you have an angiogram. You can also calculate an ejection fraction with an mm-hmm. angiogram.
Can that ejection fraction ever change? Can it improve?
Yes.
It can.
Oh, and we've seen it. You mm-hmm. know, we've seen it with Coenzyme Q10.
I mean, oh, yeah.
There are studies that show that high-dose Coenzyme Q10 can actually improve ejection fraction.
That's great.
Can it restore it completely to normal? I mean, yeah, maybe in some circumstances, mm-hmm. but it will improve it
yeah.
often. You got to go kind of high dose. I would go like 600.
And not just CoQ10, but ubiquinol.
Ubiquinol is even better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. John, wow. So, yeah, there are no contraindications with these supplements that we're talking about with mm-hmm. if you're having to take anything for the cardiomyopathy.
So the one thing I would say is some people with cardiomyopathy are on blood thinners.
Ah.
And with ubiquinol or coenzyme Q10, in some people, not all, so it seems to be a genetic effect, there is a little bit of an interference with Coumadin.
Okay.
So check your protimes if you're taking high CoQ10 because your protime or your INR may go down. So it has a vitamin K-like effect mm-hmm. for some people. Vitamin K reverses Coumadin. And because of structural similarities, ubiquinol can sometimes mm-hmm. make it so you need more Coumadin, basically. It's not that you can't take the CoQ10. You may need a little more Coumadin to achieve the goal of an INR of, you know, 2 or 3 times normal.
Okay. John, we hope that answers your question. All right. This is very interesting. This comes from D. Hello, I'm searching for an answer for a scalp condition that creates a layer of filmy wax on a clean scalp. No amount of products correct this problem. I believe it's caused by a gut issue or a parasite.
This sort of throws me for a loop.
Yes. I wonder, first of all, I wonder about anything that would cause a film on your scalp is number one hair product.
Yeah, but
if you're using a hair product.
She's saying that she thinks it's a condition.
Yeah.
You know, that where there's almost like she's producing too much sebum, like sebaceous material, like a waxy, like oily material that her pores are exuding.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What can activate your sebaceous glands is a whole lot of hair washing. A lot of rubbing and scrubbing of your scalp.
Okay.
To remove that wax. Or that oil, rather, because it's not wax.
I don't know if I should confess this here, but
yeah.
I wash my hair a lot less these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's some people never wash their hair. I don't think that's a great idea. But,
no.
You know, because I exercise and work out and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, after you've been in the pool with the chlorine, you know, maybe you want to get it out.
You want to wash
or,
that
you know,
out.
Or if you've been in the seawater,
yes.
you know, something like that. I mean, but, you know, I mostly rinse my hair because it's good to have that oil that's the naturally secreted there.
Yes, yes, that's true. So, but constant or chronic hair washing can
cause more. It overstimulates the oil
production. Overstimulates it. Ask somebody who has acne. The last thing you want to do is rub and scrub because that activates the glands. More oil is being produced. It's getting trapped. It's a double-edged sword
with
the cleaning.
Right. And there is a microbiome of your hair.
That's
true. And there's a microbiome of your scalp surface. So it would stand to reason that trying to, you know, clean it away and rub it away would be counterproductive.
So number one cause could be hair product. Number two, I would say if you're putting conditioner directly on your scalp as opposed to your hair,
how do you, like the ends of your hair. I put conditioner on and I rub it in, you know, like a shampoo.
So you're rubbing it into your scalp.
Because I like to rub it into my hair.
Yeah, but you don't have a filmy wax on your scalp.
Also, don't have such long hair that I can just do my ends of my hair, you know, like long tresses, you know, where I can.
Well, women can pretty much avoid the scalp, those that are complaining of, you know, why is my scalp so oily and I just washed it? Well, don't put conditioner directly on your scalp either.
Okay.
You have to really wash it out well, and that's another thing. But a gut issue or parasite, I personally can't think of anything else that would be causing this. See a dermatologist first, I would think.
You know, the problem is with these kind of problems is that a dermatologist, you know, may just say,
I don't know what's going on, or, you know, it's sort of a variation on a normalcy. It's, yeah. And then dismiss it, and then this person's unhappy, so.
That's true, too. And that's probably why she's contacting
exactly
us. Okay, all right. D, best of luck to you. All right.
Good point at which to pause and allow one of our sponsors to share an important message with you, so please listen up. This should be informative.
Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you, and it's going to be ongoing as long as our sponsors help us out in that regard, as well as your patronship. And so what's our next question, Lila?
We've got an email from Noel. I have IgA nephropathy for over 18 years now. Fortunately, I've lasted so long. Oh, gosh, no. Okay.
For listening, guys.
Yeah.
There's another word, mm-hmm. kidney word, in addition to glomeruli, and those are the nephrons.
The nephrons.
And the nephrons.
Easier to say.
Yeah, nephrons are sort of inclusive of the glomeruli.
Uh-huh.
They're the filtration units within the kidneys.
Yeah.
So within the nephrons are glomeruli. And so nephritis means an inflammation of
the nephrons.
Nephrons. Mm-hmm. And she has IgA, did you say?
Yes, IgA nephropathy.
Okay. So IgA is an immunoglobulin.
Yeah.
And
so it's autoimmune?
It's an autoimmune condition.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an autoimmune condition.
Okay. So Noel says, now my kidney function is at 15% and I'll need dialysis or transplant.
Okay.
Have you had cases that had fought that like this? Is there no cure?
Yeah,
this is
tough because once the kidney starts to fail, there's sort of this momentum towards continued deterioration in kidney function because it's sort of like the analogy would be say your engine's beginning to fail, you know, and it's overheating. But it's sort of going along. And then all of a sudden, you know, you one of your pistons gets knocked out. And then your car is now dependent on, instead of 6 cylinders, 5 cylinders. And then another piston overheats. And then it's 4 cylinders. And pretty soon your engine's working on 2 cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of work for the 2 cylinders.
Yeah.
And that burns out your engine. And that's sort of what burns out an overtaxed organ like the kidney, whose job it is to eliminate toxins. It's got to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, when you get up to a high single-digit creatinine, there's a critical momentum towards this. Now, we both are working with a patient who has maintained his kidney function in the high single digits, and it's getting better. And he's determined to avoid dialysis. He's the ideal patient because he'll do whatever. He'll take any number of supplements. He'll follow a very, very careful diet. He'll do virtually anything. And we've helped him.
Mm-hmm.
The question is long-term whether he'll be able to avoid dialysis.
Yeah.
So in this circumstance, I mean, it's sort of like 11th hour, or actually it's sort of 11:58 here.
Yeah.
This person's told they need dialysis. I don't know if that person can be saved from dialysis.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess transplant would be the other option.
Well, then first they do dialysis until you get, you know, you have to wait for a transplant. So usually that's an interim step. And they try to, for a younger, healthier patient, they always try to get a transplant. I mean, if you're like very old or if you have, you know, terminal cancer or something, maybe they, you know, don't put you on the list for a transplant.
Right, right. Very interesting. I'm just thinking, you know, if Noel was able to go back in time to when he was first diagnosed with this autoimmune condition.
I've worked with patients with IgA nephropathy, and they really respond to elimination of certain foods, you know, a paleo-style diet.
Right.
You know, what are some of the considerations for in terms of renal failure? You know, we just went over this with
you want to watch phosphorus levels in foods. You want to watch potassium.
Even magnesium.
Levels, even magnesium levels, absolutely. So a renal diet is composed of going lower in some of those nutrients and watching protein.
Boil down the controversy, because the old school renal diet was basically eat Wheatina and, you know, very
and
low
soy.
Protein.
Yes.
And, you know, just very,
very, very low protein.
Low protein. But a lot of like pasta and bread and, you know, that
kind
of
horrible stuff.
Right?
Exactly.
So the idea was eat carbs for your fuel and very little protein.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the net effect of that is it taxes the kidneys because it may cause a person to have abnormal blood sugars, which is not great.
Right. That will tax the kidneys.
So what's the fuel?
The fuel should still be, the fuel will still be carbs to an extent, but I don't think necessarily a ketogenic diet at this low of a filtration
There's
rate.
There's actually some literature on ketogenic diet.
Yeah. But okay, ketogenic, of course, being high fat, the protein
high
is still
fat.
Moderate.
Right.
You don't want this person on a high protein diet.
But you don't want them on a no protein diet, because that's
true.
Not good either.
Exactly.
Because you can't repair.
But a lot of people will still mistake a ketogenic diet as being high in protein.
Right.
Or a paleo diet as being high protein. It's not.
This is a moderately low protein ketogenic diet.
Exactly.
So it's a special kind of with certain considerations, because certain foods are high in phosphorus. Meat is high in phosphorus.
Meat can be, and dairy products and nuts, things like that, they're even higher in phosphorus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Dairy products and things like that. You want to avoid certain fruits that are very high in potassium.
You know, managing a patient in renal failure is a little bit like keeping a saltwater aquarium, because you know, with an ordinary person, you know, you can eat widely and, you know, you're not going to get too bent out of shape. But when your kidneys aren't filtering properly, certain things can overaccumulate.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful when you go to the health food store. You can't take stuff willy-nilly, because things can can overaccumulate in your body. Magnesium, which is a marvelous nutrient.
You don't want to take... Yes, exactly. Don't self-prescribe magnesium for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go drinking big glasses of orange juice where there's tons of potassium or a baked potato all the time either, for that matter. But we all need some protein. Even in end-stage renal failure, end-stage kidney failure, we need some amount of protein, and especially the high biological value variety. So this is still important. Yeah. Oh, wow, Noel. Okay. Okay.
I think I am going to do an entire program on this in the next couple of months. I'm going to see if I can line it up.
Kidney disease?
On chronic renal failure.
Chronic renal
Treatment of chronic renal failure. Because it's such an important area, and it's one of those areas that doesn't get talked about too much.
You're going to do like a clinical?
Yeah, clinical focuser. I'm thinking of a guest who is an expert in this field. So stay tuned.
All right. Noel, best of luck to you. Okay. Oh, here's one. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what are your diet and supplement recommendations for dealing with seborrheic keratosis?
Okay.
I'm a 62-year-old female and I have it. I visit my dermatologist.
What is it, first of all?
First of all, these are grandma barnacles.
Okay, right. And I've had
these are barnacles.
You know, it's funny because you use that term.
Yeah.
I just turned 65, so I was kind of I said something that I wanted checked out on my skin, and so I went to a dermatologist that I'd interviewed, who was one of the world's experts on skin cancer, Dr. Daryl Riggle. Showed up with my Medicare card. He probably wasn't too happy that it was Medicare, but, you know, as a courtesy, he saw me. And, you know, he said, Ron, don't worry about that. 100% is not cancer. It just barnacles.
It's just barnacles.
And it was a seborrheic keratosis,
exactly.
Which is like just a dark spot that's a little
raised. It's raised. It's almost like it's been pasted on your skin. And it can be removed quite readily.
But you have to be careful because these dark spots, they could be melanoma.
That's
true. And as a layperson, it's hard to distinguish.
That's true. So you want to go check in. So Cheryl, she's 62. I visit my dermatologist occasionally to have the lesions frozen off.
The brown spots that are on the hands.
That's different.
Those are
liver spots. They're not raised.
Oh, okay.
Or anything.
They're flat.
They're flat.
Okay.
That's something.
That's
else
actually
entirely.
Lipofuscin, which is sort of a cellular debris that's deposited in the skin. It's like okay.
Okay. Cheryl wants to explore some natural alternatives.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know of one either.
Yeah.
And Cheryl, I'll tell you, I've had a few that in the past that I've had removed, and I'm going to get removed a couple of more in a couple of days, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah. And the nice
I've tried thing, applying zinc on it. I've tried
having them removed.
Tea tree oil. Yeah. I've tried. Not working.
Having them removed.
Not working.
Also affords you opportunity to get a, they'll biopsy it, make sure that there's no cancer, concealed within it.
Right.
We have time for another question.
Let's see here. We have a question from Shazad.
Okay.
Hello, all. I'm in my late 60s and in good health and purchased a bottle of multivitamins from a relatively new brand in order to boost the intake of Bs.
Mm-hmm.
It has 30 milligrams of B1, B2. It's got about B6, 40 of B6, 200 micrograms, B12. Should I be concerned about overdose?
200 micrograms?
That's
good. That's
B12,
about right. Yeah,
that's
no,
right.
Right.
No, not at all. No. I can't see any way that you would OD on 30 milligrams or 34 or 40 milligrams of these B-complex vitamins.
So hypothetically, are there any B vitamins that you can get in trouble with? I mean, they're among the vitamins, they're water soluble, so they're not like vitamin D.
Right.
Like vitamin A, you can get liver problems. Vitamin D, you can get, calcification if you take massive amounts of vitamin D.
Yes.
Vitamin E, not so much.
Yeah.
Certainly, not even vitamin K, which is fat soluble, is not a lot of toxicity. So what about B vitamins? Where can people go wrong?
B vitamins, the amounts that Shazad is asking about, he's not going to overdose on.
Yeah. But one is problematic, and that's B6.
B6 can be. If you're taking a dose of, say, 100 milligrams a day for something, say as a diuretic, or because you have an inner ear disturbance and you need a little more of that, if you take it over the long term, you could get too much B6 accumulation, which will cause the same symptoms as a deficiency in B6,
which could cause a neuropathy or like gait problems, ataxia, kind of like a balance and gait problems. I think you'd have to take more than 100.
Probably 500.
500, which was this vogue for a while to treat PMS with very high dose B6. And so women were taking B6 at 500 or 1,000, 1,500. And there was, this actually happened at my medical school at Albert Einstein. There was a neurologist who reported on the toxicity of B6. And it was theorized that maybe they were, because they were taking B6 alone without companion B vitamins, that they may have made things worse.
Because there's a danger in only taking one of the B vitamins instead of the whole complex.
Right.
Taking the one may deplete the others.
Okay.
So there's something.
Right.
But, you're also getting some B vitamins in your food as well.
So when doctors sometimes look at patients and they say, oh, my God, your B12 is much too high. Oh, be careful.
Oh, yeah.
Not a problem.
It's not a problem.
Not a problem. It's like, look at the bank account of Bill Gates. Like, oh, my goodness, too much money. Like,
not a problem.
Not a problem. It's like abnormally high levels of money.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
But, and the same thing with B6. I find that doctors, when neurologists sometimes evaluate patients with weird dizziness or gait problems, and they just check a B6 level, and I think that's based on this study that was done in the 80s, and they say, oh, my goodness, you're overdosing on B6. Well, anyone who takes a multi or even a kind of a wimpy B complex is going to have on that test an overabundance of B6. That doesn't mean they're toxic.
Right, that's true. Or somebody with a higher B12 We like to see levels above 600,
yeah,
for example.
It's meaningful with D and A, I think, when we see too high doses. That's a concern, potentially, but not so much with the B vitamins. Yeah. So, okay, so we cover that ground. And,
thank you, Shahzad.
Yeah, so that sounds like a reasonable amount, and you're not going to run into trouble with that.
No.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today's episode of Q&A with Layla. We invite your questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. Support our sponsors. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Download more of our podcast at drhoffman.com. And subscribe to our newsletter. We got some great articles this month. We're on a roll. So become a more informed listener by accessing all the resources, the free resources that are available to you at drhoffman.com. And thank you, Layla, for helping out today.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.